This is Meet the Press, and I'm Ellie Abel. Our guest today on Meet the Press is Miss Bernadette Devlin, the 22-year-old Irish Catholic militant elected last April to the British Parliament, where she is the youngest member of the House of Commons. Miss Devlin has been playing a leading role in the recent conflict which brought Northern Ireland to the verge of civil war. We'll have the first questions now from Douglas Kiker of NBC News.
Miss Devlin, as I understand it, your position concerning the long-range role of Northern Ireland is that you would like to see British control continue there until some sort of all-Irish plebiscite could decide the proper future of Northern Ireland. Isn't this another way of saying that you would really like to see Northern Ireland united with the South, and wouldn't this lead to a real all-out civil war?
I have always said that I believe the social, cultural, and economic problems of Northern Ireland, and the present problem is a mixture of all three, can only be solved when the ideals of James Connolly, Padraig Pearse are realised, and that is the establishing in Ireland of a 32-county republic. This is different from simply saying we want to join the South. I wouldn't ask anybody to simply go in to the present structure of the 26 counties. Economically, it couldn't support six more economically depressed counties. Socially and culturally, it couldn't absorb the Ulster tradition, both Catholic and Protestant, nor could it guarantee the liberty of the Protestant heritage. But under a 32-county republic, as outlined by Connolly, it could, all men would have equal rights, equal opportunities, civil and religious liberty.
Do you believe for a moment that the Protestants in Northern Ireland would accept a United States of Ireland?
I think they would, because the reason the mass of the Protestant people in Ulster are frightened of a united Ireland is because of what they understand by a united Ireland, what they have been told by a unionist government that a united Ireland means. To them it means Catholic domination. To them it means losing British standards. But what they fail to realise is that nobody in Ulster, except the Protestant rich, that is the landed gentry, have any privileges anyway, and that they couldn't, under any system, be worse than the system we now all suffer.
Miss Devlin, I was in Northern Ireland for the Troubles, and I saw Protestants and Catholics walking the streets side by side, wearing white armbands, trying to keep the peace. You were manning the barricades. In view of your position as a Member of Parliament, were you in the right place?
I think I was in the right place, because it depends on what you understand by a Member of Parliament. I was elected to Parliament by 68,000 people. I took it I was the servant of those people. Therefore, it was up to me to represent their interests, to defend their interests, and to protect them. Now, this could be done in Parliament, when Parliament was sitting, when Parliament was listening, and prepared to act on their problems. When Parliament wasn't there, and no longer prepared to pay any attention, that didn't say I could take my holidays and say I'll represent people who suffer 24 hours a day when Parliament decides to sit and act on its responsibilities.
Thank you, Mr. Kiker. You've just met Douglas Kiker of NBC News. The other reporters on our panel today are Sidney Grusin of the New York Times, John Graham of the Financial Times, London, and Donald Grant of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. Lawrence E. Spivak, permanent member of the Meet the Press panel, will be back next Sunday. We'll continue the questions now with Mr. Grusin.
Devlin, how do you consider your own role in all this troubles or problem between North and South? Is it purely as the representative of one constituency to the British Parliament, or is it a modern Joan of Arc thing going for you several hundred years later?
Oh, I think that it is, in fact, neither. I am one 22-year-old individual who grew up in a society that is sick and very sick. And as a member of that society, I want to change it, not just because it affects me personally, but because people that I live with, Catholic and Protestant, suffer under that society. And as one person with a lot of other people, I'm trying to change it.
Is there any way of changing it, actually, Miss Devlin, on the barricades in Northern Ireland today?
Well, we have for the past 50 years. I haven't. But for the past 50 years, people have been trying to change it. We have tried by lobbying MPs. We have tried to the utmost of our power using the democratic parliamentary system. Nobody listened. We took peaceful demonstrations onto the street. in Londonderry, we marched with 15,000 people, and there wasn't any violence, peaceful demonstration, nobody listened. We have been systematically forced by a power-mongering government into the situation of violence we find ourselves. We never wanted it. We were forced into it to defend our lives and homes.
Mr. Graham?
Now, Bernadette, you don't mind if I call you that.
No.
But I'm from County Fermanagh, Northern Ireland, so I think I can. There's only one fixed point in the whole bloody history of our country, and that is that the English are amazingly bad at solving Irish questions. Now, what you and your supporters have been doing over the last months has forced the English to come into Northern Ireland. Do you really think any good can come of this?
See, you know, your whole question emphasizes a very peculiar point. 50 years ago, after the Irish Rebellion in 1916, Lloyd George invited people to England, and like all English people who couldn't solve the Irish problem, he made a mess of it. He called for the partition of Ireland, and by the Government of Ireland Act, he stamped Ulster as British. 1949, they reaffirmed it. Ulster is British. A few days ago, between the Prime Minister's talks, Mr. Wilson said, Ulster is British. Now that's all very well, but if Ulster is British, then let the British government solve Ulster's problems. We never asked to be British. They were the people who made us English. It's their responsibility, and it's time that Mother England stopped looking polite about it and did something about the problem she created.
Well now, you say you want a united republic of 32 counties, and yet you say that you encourage the British to come in because Ulster is British.
It's
Isn't
not
this
matter,
inconsistent?
It's not a matter of encouraging the British to come in. The British are in and have been in for 50 years. We are not inviting them in. They are there. I am in the peculiar position of other people in Northern Ireland where I can hold two passports. I can be British by passport. I can be Irish by passport. Therefore, we have this bit of land that is being disputed. Ulster claims it is unionist. It belongs to the landed planter. Britain claims it is British. The government of the 26 counties claims it is Irish. I wish people would remember that on that little block of land live about 1.5 million people who are suffering. We are tired of the politicians arguing over it. The responsibility lies with England, since we by law belong to England. Some people don't want to belong to England. Some people don't care where they belong, they just want to live. But it's time the problem was solved. People's lives depend on it.
Now, it may be unfortunate that the six counties of Ulster are, the six Northern Irish counties belong to England. But as you said, the English are in, and they're very much in now.
Mm.
In the long term, how are you going to get them out?
Mr. Harold Wilson, Prime Minister of England, forks out £120 million a year to keep Ulster British. He pays it to the Stormont government, and they apply it very badly to keep Ulster not only British, but Ulster poor. Now, Harold Wilson would be very glad to get Northern Ireland off his hands. This is the whole problem. The British are there. It is their responsibility to create in Northern Ireland an acceptable form of government. There has never been an acceptable form of government. 40% of the population have always been opposed to the very existence of the government, not just the way they run things, but the very existence of the government. Now, you cannot rule a country where almost half the people are opposed to the existence of the ruling power. Britain started it. Britain has got to solve it. If Britain says we're all British, we'll sort that out when we come to it. But let's sort it out between the people who have a right to decide. Let's all sit down, the government of Stormont, the government of Westminster, the government of the Republic, and all the political tendencies within the civil rights movement who are not represented in Parliament because a unionist government makes politics it doesn't like illegal. Let's all sit down round a table and say, look, let's put all our solutions in. Then let's go to the people and say, which solution do you want? If they vote on it, they'll accept it.
Mr. Grant.
Mr. Devlin, I find that very interesting, but here we are in the United States. What do you think the United States could or should do in this situation? Do you, for instance, have any plans to see President Nixon while you're here?
Well, about plans, we're working it out in such an emergency because I simply came here that I don't know who, in fact, I'll be able to see when I'm here. If I can see President Nixon, I will see President Nixon, and I'll see him on two counts. One, because my first reason for coming here is that we urgently need money. I'm sure that President Nixon has some, and I'm prepared to accept money from anybody who has money and is prepared to give it to people who need it. And the other point is that I think that America should realize that America supplies the guns to the British government, who supply the arms to the Royal Ulster Constabulary, who supply the arms to the B Specials, who shoot people in Northern Ireland with it.
Yes, but who are you, may I ask? Because you call your organization, I believe, the People's Democracy. When I was in Derry in the Bogside a few days ago, an organization called the Derry Citizens Defense Association handed me a pass. One hears a good deal about the IRA and a lot of other organizations. Could you clarify this organizational picture?
If I were to try and clarify the organizational picture, we would probably be here till this time next year. But briefly, if I can run down on them, the People's Democracy was a basically student group formed after the 1st March and the 5th of October. Civil Rights Association is the umbrella group for all the groups in Northern Ireland. The Defence Association was formed when the barricades went up to coordinate all the groups inside the barricades, so that the Defence Association is representative of the People's Democracy, the Citizens Action Committee, the Tenants Association, all the organisations that are inside.
And the IRA?
The IRA is a peculiar body of men well known in the history and mythology of Ireland. My own attitude is that given the structure of the IRA, which according to the Unionist government is a subversive organization, you don't walk up to people and say he's in the IRA, because if you could identify people like that, they'd all be in Crumlin, where known Republicans are at the minute, simply because of their political beliefs.
Mr.
I don't think the IRA is represented in the Defence Association.
Well, there's not a Protestant in all of Northern Ireland who doesn't firmly believe that the IRA, the Rebel Irish Army, didn't play an active part in the disorders of the last 2 weeks. Now, to your personal knowledge, was the IRA involved?
The IRA was not, to my personal knowledge, involved in the Bogside, because what happened in the Bogside was that people threw up the barricades and the men, women and children who lived in the area defended the area against the police. Now, there may have been a man who lived there who was also in the IRA, but even then, it was as a resident he was fighting.
As long as I'm talking about Protestant beliefs, I think it's accurate to say that there's not a Protestant in all of Northern Ireland who doesn't think that a lot of money for Catholic arms comes from the United States. Now, Ms. Devlin, you're here to raise money. What assurances can you give to people who give you money that this money will not be used for weapons?
On a simple logical basis, you can't ask either starving children or dead men to shoot.
Well,
now, we need a lot of money. We need money for things that really matter. And the things that really matter to me are that women and children are living somewhere in the south of Ireland, families are divided, and the men are defending their homes. Their homes are burnt to the ground. People don't have homes to live in anymore. Now, it is much more important to me that you get a house built, that you get food to those people, that you get clothing to people whose belongings have been burnt out, that you try and create a normal society again for people who have been scattered, than that you go around helping to destroy more homes.
I've seen your Catholic neighborhoods, and I know that they're in desperate straits. I've also seen the Protestant neighborhoods with burned out homes. Who did that? These were not on the barricades now. These were back in the neighborhoods. Somebody had to go in and throw firebombs, and I don't think they did it themselves.
I don't think they did it themselves. I'm quite prepared to believe that people burnt out Protestant homes and people burnt out Catholic homes. And I lay the blame, firstly, on the Unionist government that turned Catholic Irishmen against Protestant Irishmen to keep itself in power and to keep both in poverty. When I go back to Northern Ireland, if I see someone who hasn't got a home, do you think that I am going to say, I'm sorry, you know, we only build homes for Catholics? We build homes for people who are homeless because they are all Irishmen. And we will unite Irishmen against a power that has divided them for 50 years.
Mr. Grusin.
Mr. Devlin, you spoke a little while ago of a vote being taken after the three governments concerned put their plans on the table and have Ireland vote on the plans. I assume you mean a vote in both the 26 southern counties and in the northern six counties.
I think this is fair, because...
But isn't that a loaded vote against the northern?
It depends on what you're voting for. You know, if you are going to vote on Catholic Protestant, you are going to, you know, outnumber the Protestants, because on an all-Ireland level there are fewer of them.
But is there any reasonable way that the northern Catholic can think of it in any other way?
We must think of it in some other way, because our problem in Ireland has always been a problem of poverty, a problem of being ruled by people who are only interested in their own power. You don't ask people to vote on, do you want to be a Catholic or a Protestant? Do you want to live in the North or in the South? What people vote for is a policy. And there are a few policies in Northern Ireland, a policy that will improve their social and economic conditions. And we work out the policies and we ask people to vote on them. Because you only unite a country when you unite its people.
Ms. Devlin, is there any hope for North and South losing their separate identities in a greater political grouping such as Europe, for example?
They probably could, but I am personally against this kind of losing of identity. I think that a European community is stronger when the component parts feel self-identification in their own country. I think Ireland in Europe is a better Ireland if people remember they are Irish in Europe rather than they are simply Europeans with no home base.
Ms. Devlin, some three or four years ago, when Mr. Lammas was Prime Minister in Dublin and Captain O'Neill in Stormont, there was a hope, or there appeared to be some small movement toward better understanding between the two Irelands. What's happened? What's gone wrong since then?
Well, the two of them came up and they talked, and all politicians talk, and as someone who sits in the House of Commons, I know that they do pretty little else other than talk. And the two prime ministers came up and they got on as gentlemen very well together. They didn't produce any sound concrete action which would alleviate the fears of Protestant people that there was something terrible on the other side of the border. They talked about tourism, and we had the ministers in Northern Ireland saying, look, we're not doing anything with him till he recognises the border. And you had people in the South saying exactly the same thing, and nothing happened because it was left to the politicians instead of the people.
Mr. Graham.
Most English people, and in fact most people anywhere outside Ireland, think that the behaviour of the government of the Republic of Ireland in this has been disgraceful. You sit in the House of Commons. What do you think?
I have certain reservations about the behaviour of the government. Now, they sent people up to the border, you know, and I don't care what the politicians think about it. We needed medical help. And we weren't getting medical help in the north of Ireland. For 5 days in the Bogside, the only medical corps who helped us was a voluntary corps of the Knights of Malta. None of the other great bodies came through the barricades to assist people. They were a voluntary association of no more than 10 young people, and they did it. Now, we needed medical supplies, and we got them from across the border. Those people in the Free State Army were useful. But I'm prepared to accept that the government in the Republic were making political capital. I personally asked the Minister of Defence in the 26 counties for gas masks for women and children, and he said he couldn't give them to me. And I was prepared to personally take the responsibility of theft, of stealing them, because we needed them for the children to get them before we could get them across the border. He wouldn't give them to me, which showed me that he was prepared to talk about what he was going to do. And it was great bravado, but he couldn't do it, nor was he prepared to do it, because that would be stepping on a whole lot of trade agreements with England.
I'd like to ask one more question only. It seems to me the central question, perhaps the only question. The Protestants of the North of Ireland fought very hard and for a very long time to create Northern Ireland. They're a very tough, determined, rough, contrary lot. They're not going to give it up. There are more Protestants than Catholics. Any war between the two can only have one result. Doesn't it worry you to encourage the beginnings of such a war?
I've stated this before. I am not encouraging the beginnings of war. We have never wanted war. We have tried to put a reasonable point of view. We have been forced by a government into a situation of war for exactly the reasons that you have stated, because they work on that basis. They have forced us into war, and they say, look, we'll fight it out with you, and you lose, and that's the end of it. We are not prepared to take that situation, because we have justness on our side. They are fighting for a Protestant state for the Protestant rich. We are fighting for a country where the poor, Catholic and Protestant, will for a change have a few of the better things of life.
We have less than 3 minutes remaining, gentlemen, so let's try to keep the questions short. Now, Mr. Grant.
Yes, Mr. Devlin, I was thinking about the immediate situation in the Bogside, where they're surrounded by the British troops, and indeed the headquarters of the Defense Association has a direct line to the British headquarters. But is this likely to last long, and when will the barricades come down?
It won't last long. I was talking to Northern Ireland. In fact, I was talking to Derry this morning, just before I came to this program. And some of the newspapers in Northern Ireland this morning are saying that the troops intend to take down the barricades inside 48 hours. This rumor has been denied by the politicians in Stormont, who have no control, but the army has said nothing. One accepts the British Army can't stay there forever. Something's got to be done. They've got to move one way or the other.
Will the day ever come when Protestants and Catholics don't vehemently hate each other in Northern Ireland? And can peace ever come to that country until the day does come?
The day will come when Protestants and Catholics no longer hate each other, because they don't hate each other on the basis of their religious differences. They will hate each other when they do not fear each other and when they are not used against each other to keep a few people in power.
Mr. Bruce, do the 26 counties still want the 6 counties of the North? I remember going back to Ireland, where I was born after the war, and trying to start a discussion or an argument about the North. Nobody paid the slightest bit of attention to me.
I think that's a question you ask the 26 counties. But again, I stress, you don't ask the politicians, you ask the people. They can't support us under their existing Tory system. But the people of Ireland can live together if people would let them live together.
Mr. Graham.
Are you enjoying yourself?
I always enjoy myself. I don't know why, I just do. I'm basically a very happy person.
Mr. Grant?
I was wondering, Miss Devlin, whatever became of the old Irish ascendancy, or does it still exist in the North?
This is the problem of the North. The Irish ascendancy, the old planter ascendancy, still exists. And this is the difference between the ordinary Protestant people and the planter ascendancy, of whom Chichester, Clark, the Duke of Hamilton, Lord Brookborough, Dame Dara Parker, all these weird people come from. They have no common bond with the ordinary people of the country. They own all the land. They own most of the property. They're the people who get rich on foreign industry because they own all the business shares. And they have nothing in common with the poor Catholic or Protestant Ulsterman. And it's time we got rid of them.
Mr. Kiker, one last very brief question.
How long will the British troops, in your opinion, stay in Northern Ireland? How long must they stay there now?
They've got to stay until the problem's solved. They simply can't go out and leave us with the old problem again. They stay till the problem's solved. How long it takes to solve the problem depends on Harold Wilson and the people.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but our time is up. Thank you, Miss Devlin, for being with us today. I'll tell you about next week's special edition of Meet the Press after this message.
You might call this ground fog, but pilots call it marginal visibility. And what you're about to see is a 70-ton jetliner being guided in by a Sperry Rand flight control system. A system that sees when the pilot can't. There's another time when good visibility is a problem. In the morning, early, when millions of Remington electric shavers, also made by Sperry Rand, are guided along millions of sleepy faces. So you see, at Sperry Rand, we're synergistic. We do a lot of different things. One day we fly a plane. The next day we shave a face. Wait to see what we do tomorrow.
For a printed copy of today's interview, send 10 cents in coin and a stamped self-addressed envelope to Merkle Press, Box 2111, Washington, D.C. 20013.
Next Sunday, Meet the Press will present a full-hour special program from the National Governors Conference in Colorado Springs. Our guests will be the governors of Colorado, Tennessee, New York, New Jersey, Illinois, and Louisiana. Don't miss this important program beginning 1/2 hour earlier than usual on most of these stations. Check your local listings for the exact time in your area. Now, this is Ellie Abel saying goodbye for Bernadette Devlin and Meet the Press.
Today's edition of Meet the Press was brought to you by Allstate Insurance Companies, the good hands people who find new ways to bring you better insurance protection. You're in good hands with Allstate. Once again this year, NBC brings you the annual Miss America pageant. Share all the suspense and excitement of this world-famous beauty pageant, live and in color, from Atlantic City, Saturday, September 6th, right here on NBC. This is Howard Rieg speaking. Meet the Press has been a public affairs presentation of NBC News and has come to you live from our studios in New York City.